dignity,
security,
freedom,
freedom,
respect,
justice,
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 equality,
equality,
remedy,
and protection,
fairness,
fair time,
citizens,
right,
work,
peace,
losers,
men.
It's my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum,
identity,
family,
home,
conscience,
expression,
expression.
Expression,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
work,
leisure,
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 health,
education,
progress,
culture,
human rights,
Cartagena,
solidarity,
responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name's Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by my co-host Gordon Barnes. Welcome, Gordon.
Oh, got to turn your mic up here.
Thanks, Jim, and welcome to all our listeners this Friday noon hour on Human Rights Radio. Whether you're tuning in here in Regina or over 91.3 FM, or maybe you're listening via the internet, we'd really like to welcome everybody who takes an interest in Human Rights Radio.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm just looking up on the wall. We've got it posted. Channel 806 on Sastel Max is another way you can listen. And channel 341 on the Access Communications Digital Service. So there's all sorts of different ways people can hear CJTR.
And I guess that's a good way to maybe kind of go back to something that we wanted to mention at the beginning of the program, Jim. And that's this is the very first day of
Radiothon.
Right.
Exactly.
So, do you want to give it a little bit of an update about what Radiothon's all about?
Sure, sure. CJTR, this is CJTR's annual fundraising drive. And so this has happened a number of times before, and it starts today, and it runs to Saturday, October 20th. And every year, we seek your financial support to help keep CJTR vibrant and growing. It all takes cash. We are very frugal, by the way. You know,
is that right?
we don't blow our money, but we do spend our money on good things. If you come and visit the station, you'll notice that we have brand new carpet.
Wow.
And if you'd been here before, you knew that we've needed it for many years, but there were other things higher up on our priority list, like equipment and that sort of thing. So that got purchased first, but we finally were able to see our way cleared to put new carpet in our studios. And it's very nice, and it'll last for a long time. And we've also got new furniture in our waiting room here. And if you come and visit us, you'll be able to see that. And that's the sort of thing that your dollars pay for, as well as improving our equipment to make it possible for us to improve the service.
I was just going to comment, Jim, when I look at some of the the changes that I would describe them as functional and modest.
Yeah.
And important in terms of maintaining the space here.
Absolutely.
From my perspective, community radio is a great way to support our community in general, because what you're doing is helping so many people who either contribute through spoken word programs like this one,
right,
or maybe through music programs. And one of the things I'm always conscious of when I'm out and around and maybe in my car driving around and got the radio on is that there's incredible diversity to the programming on CJTR, community radio. I appreciate that when I'm throughout the week able to pick up so many different kinds of programs. I enjoy actually the diversity of the music, but also the community discussions that happen and the forums that and conversations that take place on community radio. So I think you've got some of the details as to how people can actually make a contribution if they would like to support through the Radiothon.
There are many ways we can do this. Of course, we would love you to come down and visit. That would be a good thing. You know, come down here and visit during regular business hours, and you can donate in person. But you can also donate online at www.cjtr.ca/donate. And we have a secure server that you can make your pledge with using PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, and American Express. So there's all sorts of different ways you can do that. You can call us at 525-7274. Before October 12th, we don't have to worry about that because this is October 12th. But anyway, yes, you can call now from 9 to 5. But during our Radiothon fundraising drive, which has started now, we're going to have volunteers on hand to take your calls from 6 a.m. to midnight for the entire length of the drive. So from now on, it's from 6 to midnight. We'll have somebody answering the phone, and you can make your pledge over the phone. Okay, and the address for those of you, and it's surprising, Gord, how many people don't know where CJTR is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And my own personal project here is I'd love to have a nice big sign, but we're talking about that and we'll see what happens. I would love to have one, but we are at number 301, 1102 8th Avenue, and that is the old GMC building that's been here for many years. We're on the third floor of the building, and it's near the corner of Winnipeg Street and 8th Avenue. And at the office here, we can accept cash, checks, and credit cards. And we're grateful for any pledge amount. And by the way, we have some great prizes. So not only are we asking for support, but we have some prizes and incentives for you to consider. For every $25 you pledge, you'll be entered in our Radiothon 2012 Grand Prize Donors Draw. You could win a fantastic week-long trip for two to the Mayan Riviera. You spend a week at the five-star Grand Bahia Principe Coba Resort, courtesy our great partners at Carlson Wagenli Rickert Travel and Sunquest Vacations. You can find complete contest rules here. Now, every $25 pledge also gets you entered in our terrific daily prize draws of a $100 gift certificate from a great CJTR sponsor. Today's sponsor, by the way, is Colin O'Brien Man Shop. So, if you make a pledge today, you could win a $100 gift certificate from Colin O'Brien Man Shop. So, there you go. Okay, now, there are a few other things that you could possibly get. We have a gift for a $50 donation. We'll give you a CJTR license plate frame. If you donate $100, you will get a CJTR Radiothon 2012 T-shirt. We're not sure about the colors yet. A sincere thank you. Let me look here. I'm just wondering if I've missed something, but nope. I just thought maybe they'd made the announcement about the colors, and I didn't know. But anyway, we want to give a sincere thank you to everyone who helped support CJTR Radiothon 2012. We know you appreciate the service we provide to Regina and area, and we hope that you'll help us reach our fundraising goal of $20,000. If you have any questions about Radiothon 2012 or CJTR in general, please call 525-7274 Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. But, of course, our pledge line is open till midnight, from now until the end of Radiothon.
Great stuff.
Right from, what, from 6 a.m., did I say? 6 a.m. to midnight.
Yeah.
Okay. So keep that in mind, folks. And we appreciate every dollar that you can send our way.
And remember, what you're doing is helping people who are on the air as volunteers 24 hours a day, whether they're contributing as volunteers with spoken word programming or some of the music. I'm sure you enjoy all of it. And as I mentioned before, the diversity is really what is a major feature of community radio in Regina.
Yeah, if you like music, you're going to love CJTR. I mean, like Gord says, the diversity. If you like blues, we've got lots of blues. If you like rock, we've got some really different rock shows, stuff that you are not going to hear on the other stations in town, you know.
Right.
And then you're going to hear some off-the-wall stuff, you know. there are a few programs that I listen to and I think, wow, where did that guy get that music?
Yeah.
You know?
That's right.
It's incredible. You'll learn something by listening to CJTR.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's not one of those stations where you're going to turn it on at one point in the day and hear the same music three or four times.
No.
The course of the day. It's
Well, you know, let's be honest about it. The commercial radio stations, and I listen to them myself from time to time, but they'll have a playlist of about 40 songs, and they go through them, so you hear them over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So if you want some diversity, you want to listen to different music, different genres from either long ago or really really new alternative stuff. We had music awards in the city here not too long ago, Gord, and the irony was that most of those folks don't get much airplay on the regular commercial stations. Guess who plays them? We do.
Yeah.
So if you want to listen to new Canadian talent, CJTR is the place to listen.
Right. Maybe, Jim, we could...
We could go on and on here.
Maybe what we should do, though, is in the second half of the program, we'll come back to the Radiothon information and provide it again, just in terms of how people can contribute it and give people the phone numbers again and
sure.
and all the rest of those details. So maybe if you missed it in the first introduction here, we will be coming back to that in the second half of the program. I thought, Jim, what we might do on Human Rights Radio today is kind of cover a number of current concerns that Amnesty International has been working on over the last few weeks and some of the things that are coming up in the next few weeks as well.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be good if you could share in a few minutes the travels that our senior staff person for the Canadian section, Alex Neve, has been making most recently to two countries as part of research missions on our behalf. But before you do that, I just wanted to reflect a little bit because actually it was earlier this week, a couple days ago on October 10th, was the World Day for the, and it's the 10th World Day, against the death penalty. And this is an international event that people mark all around the world, and it's part of a campaigning by a global coalition that has now throughout the last 10 years contributed to the decision by 17 new countries to abolish the death penalty. That's quite significant for all crimes since the very first World Day against the death penalty was held in 2003. And that means to date 140 states have abolished the death penalty in either law or practice. And that's more than 70% of the world's countries. Now, even though that's significant and there's been good progress, Amnesty International is very concerned still that the practice is still going on in a number of countries,
including, for example, powerful countries like the United States and China, where executions are happening quite regularly and in appalling ways. We understand that currently, looking back to the, when I say currently, the 2011 year, 21 countries actually carried out executions. And, you know, the list would not be a surprise if we went through them. There are obviously countries, I've already mentioned United States and China, but one significant note, in the last year, Latvia was one of the countries that abolished the use of capital punishment for all crimes. However, there are a number of significant holdout states, and these include, for example, Iraq, Iran, that is in the news regularly. Iran has already executed, so far this year, almost double the number of people it executed for all of 2011, which is really a concern. And quite notably, in Saudi Arabia, 65 people have been executed by early October throughout this year. Almost all of them were foreign nationals. Obviously, there are some other countries of note, Iraq as an example. And of a concern to us is that there were some countries that, you know, might have had the death penalty still, but, you know, may have not been using it more recently and have, you know, reintroduced the use of the death penalty. And Gambia is one of those countries. So the campaigning internationally still continues.
Mm-hmm.
That was the whole, I guess, the purpose of October 10th, the World Day Against the Death Penalty, and the international coalition that works on this sort of uses that as an occasion to highlight some of the key information and remind people that, you know, that under international human rights treaties, there are responsibilities countries have, member countries of the United Nations have, and also including under the various other human rights standards and protocols.
I have a question, Gord.
Yeah, sorry.
Just curious here, am I right in my understanding that the death penalty is still on Canada's books, possibly for the murder of a peace officer?
You know, that's a detail I'd need to kind of get back to you on,
okay.
Jim, but I think you may be right, but certainly...
Nobody has been executed.
That's right. There has been no executions in Canada for years now. The last campaign, when there was a consideration and debate about this in Canada, and there was a private member's bill to bring back the use of the death penalty, actually, in Canada, was many years ago now. It was a significant vote in the House of Commons, and I think it hopefully has put to rest the debate in Canada. I recognize that, you know, there are people who still feel that it's an appropriate way to go, but it really does not conform to international human rights standards. There have been so many instances where people have been executed, and including in, for example, United States.
Yes.
Where later they have been found to be innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And
Well, I can think of instances in the States where there's overwhelming evidence before the execution.
Mm-hmm.
Before the execution, and the authorities refused to accept the fact that the evidence was there, and they executed them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to understand.
And in Canada, you know, we've recognized, even in situations where people have been convicted of murder, that mistakes, and, you know, they have not been executed, but they have been convicted of murder, mm-hmm. and spent years in jail as a consequence of that. We've recognized on occasion that mistakes have been made. Mm. And, you know, people have been released from jail because of new evidence and a new trial. And, you know, there's been some quite famous cases in that regard.
Yep.
And, you know, you think about it in terms of, is after that having, an appropriate way for, you know, justice to be carried out?
Yeah. You know, after a lot of them, after decades of being in jail, you know, the evidence comes out that, no, they shouldn't be in jail at all.
Yeah. There is an interesting story with respect to the death penalty, and that is with respect to the United States, that there is a book that people could get. It's called The Exonerated. It's about people who actually were on death row for years, in many cases. And later, because of the evidence that came forward, were found that, you know, that they were not responsible for the crimes that they were convicted of in the courts. And as a result, they were exonerated and let go. One of the people in that book, there's a book called The Exonerated. I'd encourage people to take the time. If you know, if you've got a little bit of doubt about this issue, maybe you find that book and read it. But, you know, one of the remarkable stories is about a woman named Sunny Jacobs, who was on death row, convicted of murdering two police officers in the States. She was convicted with her partner. He was actually executed. And later, they recognized that an error had been made, that not only was he not responsible, but Sonny Jacobs was not responsible for the murders they had been convicted of. Sonny Jacobs, fortunately, had not been executed, but she was then let go, and she had spent years in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a good sort of example where, even though we might have a bit more confidence of the outcomes of our justice system and our trials and all the rest of it, in, for example, Canada, the United States, there are reasons to be very, very cautious about, I guess if I can put it this way, our level of confidence, and also the, you know, the outcomes in terms of when people are found guilty of a crime like murder. So, as I say, that's one thing that we did want to note and spend a little bit of time just reflecting on relative to October 10th earlier this week.
I was just going to say, anybody that has had any close experience or watched a court in action, I think would be struck by the way it's not nearly as cut and dried as it looks like on TV. You know, it's an inexact science. And as a lawyer acquaintance of mine once said, what you get from court is not necessarily justice, it's resolution. Right. Something gets put to bed, but it may not be justice. And if you're talking about the life of a human being, this can have a very, very tragic outcome.
So, Jim, you know, just one thing before we take a break, before the second half of the program, to change the discussion a little bit, and we just got a few minutes. Maybe what I'd like to do, and we'll come back to the conversation about Alex Neves' travels in the second half of the program, rather than start in on that now. But
okay.
Something that has been in the news, and I know through personal conversations throughout this week, a lot of people have noted this, is the terrible news out of Pakistan, where a young woman who is 14 years old, and you can imagine a young woman in Pakistan who is actually regarded as a human rights activist. And her activism involved campaigning for the right for young women to go to school. And she lived in a part of Pakistan that is very dangerous, but having said that, she campaigned courageously and publicly for the right for girls to have access to education in her region. And she had been doing that since she was 11 years old. And unfortunately, earlier this week, she was shot and is now being treated in the hospital. It's a very, very serious and shocking act of violence. The Taliban have claimed responsibility for this because they do not support the idea that girls should be able to have an education. I know from many conversations I've had from this about this over the week, people have noted this in the news, and I think it's an important thing to reflect on how fragile people's rights are around the world, and how important it is that we continue our human rights work.
She's in a coma right now, I think.
That's right, right.
And we don't know what the outcome is going to be.
It's going to be pretty tough going for her. But I hope that, if there's any outcome out of this, that the people of Pakistan do seem to be rallying across political lines even, behind the idea that this was a terrible, terrible act, crime against a young woman. And also they seem to be, at this point, rallying around the whole thing that she was campaigning for, is to support the right of girls to have an education.
I think what this really points out, Gord, is that people the world over are people, you know. They don't have the extreme views that we hear about. We hear the news about the extremes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you actually go and see what kind of lives people are living, what their attitudes are, they're just trying to make a living just like us. You know, they're just trying to make a life. And they don't hold these extreme views. They're the victim of it by far. They're not the ones that are perpetrating. They're the victims.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we've just about got to break time, and I brought along a Sarah Sleen CD, just a little different, and at the end of the break, I am going to play Your Wish Is My Wish. She's been here a few times, and I'm not sure whether I caught her the last time, but when she was at Dark Hall a few years ago, I heard Sarah. But we'll get onto the break here right now. We'll play some Sarah Sleen, and then we'll talk about Alex Neve.
Great.
By mind storm, I did carry you through the briars of disbelief, through the woods of lethargy, through a groaning dark so deep, I thought I'd die. Fountain I did cool our feet under red and rainless skies, singing ragged lullabies to the grief all advertised in neon light. Baby, your wish is
And that is Sarah Sleen, one of my very favorite singers. I love her harmonies. I love her music. It's just such a wonderful musical experience, Gord.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good noon hour kind of choice. I really enjoyed listening to that, Jim. Glad you picked it.
I don't hear Sarah Sleen often enough, so.
So, Jim, I think you were maybe going to go back to providing an update on the Radiothon information. And
yep.
We were saying at the very first part of the program, today is the kickoff for Radiothon.
It is, and I neglected to mention how we're kicking it off.
What's the news there?
Well, the news is a kickoff concert.
Wow.
And it's going to be at the Exchange this evening. It's a night of Latin-flavored guitar, jazz, and funk. So get ready to get down with the funk.
All right. And where's the Exchange?
The Exchange is on 8th Avenue, just up, it's just up from Dewdney, not far from Albert.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact address, but I think everybody knows where the Exchange
all
is.
Right.
You'll find it.
Okay.
If you don't know where it is, give us a call here at the station and we will direct you.
All right.
And it's going to be the debut of the People of New Alma with special guests, the Ben Winoski Project. There's a familiar name in this city.
All right.
Excellent guitar. Doors open at 8 p.m. and the show starts at 9. So you can make your CJTR Radiothon pledge at the door and help us kickstart our annual fundraising drive. So it's starting today, and for all the reasons that we went over earlier, Gord, this is a wonderful opportunity to show your support to CJTR, and you can call right now. In fact, for the rest of the week, you can call any time from 6 in the morning till midnight, and we'll have somebody manning the phone, and you can make your pledge over the phone. You can still come down during regular business hours and make your pledge. You can give us cash. You can do the credit cards.
Right.
And
you know, I was saying earlier that the diversity of community radio is really one of my things that I appreciate. And if you haven't done so already today, why not just take a moment right now and call in? It's 525-7274, and you can make a pledge.
Right.
And when you do that today, just so you know, you're going to be entered in a daily prize today and be eligible to win a gift certificate from Colin O'Brien's Man Shop.
$100.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there you are. As long as you make a pledge today, you'll be entered in for that. So,
I have to remind you, Gord. You probably don't know this, but I have to tell you.
What's that?
If you make your pledge today, not only are you eligible for today's daily prize, you're eligible for all the other daily prizes.
Wow!
So if you do your pledge today, you have a chance to win, eight daily prizes. Yeah.
That's great. You know, Jim, that reminds me of the old expression, vote early, vote often. But it is a great way to support community radio.
It's kind of like that. So there's so much incentive there for you to to make your pledge today, and then you get in on all those. Now, everybody is eligible, of course, for the grand prize. And the grand prize is that fantastic week-long trip for two to the Mayan Riviera. This is like a minimum $25 pledge. Okay, so you need to pledge at least $25 to get in on these special prizes. So you could win the fantastic week-long trip for two to the Mayan Riviera, and that's courtesy of Carlson Wagenli Rickard Travel and Sunquest Vacations. And if you want to know more about this stuff, and you can also donate online, make your pledge online. Just go to www.cjtr.ca for the details, and you can find out all about it. Plus, you can actually make your pledge online.
Good stuff.
So there you are.
Okay. So we were mentioning in the first portion of the program that we'd like to provide a bit of an update on travels by Alex Neve, who's the senior staff person for the Canadian section. Over the last couple of weeks, he's been traveling to a couple regions of the world where there are significant human rights concerns. And I think, Jim, you were going to share some information about that.
Yeah, actually, we were at a film fest night, and mention was made of some of the problems of in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
And so more to that, it was less than a month ago that Luis Vélez Andrade, leader of the National Indigenous Organization of Colombia, ONIC, made a gut-wrenching appeal at a press conference that was organized on Parliament Hill here in Canada. "I come here with an urgent message," he said. "Indigenous peoples where I live are facing the grave danger of physical and cultural extermination." The respected Indigenous leader added a second, even more important message: "I call on Canadians to take action to help protect the very survival of Indigenous peoples in Colombia," he said. ONIC has placed particular emphasis on Canada because of the signing and activation of the Canada-Colombia Free Trade Agreement in August of 2011. This has created opportunities and obligations to ensure that trade and investment does not trump human rights. Now, here at Amnesty International, we take seriously the call for solidarity from ONIC, which 2 years ago appealed for our help with efforts to break the silence about a devastating human rights crisis in the South American country. At least a third of Colombia's 102 distinct indigenous peoples are at risk of complete destruction amidst armed conflict and the imposition of resource extraction projects on their territory. Colombia's highest court describes the situation as an emergency, as serious as it is invisible, and called on the Colombian government to take immediate action to protect the rights and survival of indigenous peoples. Yet effective measures and the political will to implement them will not happen until the emergency is made visible and sufficient pressure is mounted. Which reminds me, we've got pictures of some of these people. Where are those pictures right now, Gord?
Well, we've had them on display at the First Nations University here in Regina over the last month, and collected a really tremendous number of petitions, signatures on petitions. What we're doing actually is going to have them on display starting October 13th, tomorrow, at our provincial conference. They'll actually be moved tomorrow to Luther College at the University of Regina for the day. And after that, we've made arrangements, and one of our Amnesty International members, who's active at the University of Saskatchewan campus in Saskatoon, is making arrangements to have them on display for about a month there. So we hope to create awareness. We've done significant work here in Regina on this. We hope to create some awareness in the Saskatoon area as well around what's happening in Colombia. If anybody wants to check out the Colombia Indigenous Peoples photo exhibit, you could go to the website. Our own website is amnestysaskatchewan.ca, or else our Facebook group, Amnesty International Saskatchewan. And on that page, we've got photos of students from the First Nations University when we actually did the launch, holding the photos of Indigenous peoples in Colombia, and they're very impressive. And Alex's trip there this last week, he was documenting doing research work on the human rights situation, but he was also standing there in solidarity with the local indigenous leaders in Colombia. And we believe that his trip was an important initiative. And prior to that, Jim, he was actually in a different part of the world, and maybe you can share a little bit of information about that as well.
Yeah, we've talked when Alec has been here before. He's talked about his involvement and his interest in Cote d'Ivoire, and he was recently there again, and he sends us a message here talking about wrapping up their week's work in Western Cote d'Ivoire, and he left there with many deep impressions. And his first impression, just as when he was there last in June of 2011, he's so inspired by and has so much respect for the countless women and men who are working to improve human rights protection on the ground there in Cote d'Ivoire. Some do so very much as human rights activists, volunteering with existing human rights associations, or taking steps to set up their own local organizations. Others don't think of themselves as human rights activists, but are definitely standing up for human rights through their work as priests, aid workers, journalists, and even police officers. And many others are simply doing what is necessary to help their families and communities heal from past abuses, cope with ongoing violations, and try to stay out of the way of future harm. It's always difficult, and in some instances, very dangerous. To document human rights violations, identify wrongdoers, or even just to get people thinking and talking about human rights is perilous in this part of the country. That was something on their minds at every turn, wanting to be sure that their own contact with the local human rights defenders didn't end up putting them at greater risk. One woman in particular who Alex met when he was there in June of 2011, as well, left him in awe of both her courage and her capacity. It seemed there was not a village or a neighborhood where Clementine had not been active, seeking out people who endure the hardships of this region's ongoing human rights crisis and offering what help that she can. Often that is just to listen. Sometimes it is to help them get medical care or lodge a complaint with the police. Clementine proudly and passionately talks with women about their rights, children about their rights, and the displaced about their rights. All of it, she told him, comes from the simple feeling that she cannot turn away if people are suffering. And if that is not enough, she's energetically looking for initiatives that can help people claim their rights. Her latest project is an ambitious rice-growing collective for women who have suffered rape and other abuses. Clementine told Alex, it's breaking their backs but lifting their hearts. But Alex left with such a clear sense of the deeply entrenched impunity that has trapped communities in Cote d'Ivoire in decades of enmity and conflict at best, and crimes against humanity at worst. One man's story told that story so well. 60 years old, he fled with his wife, children, and grandchildren when their village was attacked in March of 2011 in the midst of the frenzied electoral violence that had spiraled out of control after the 2010 presidential vote. They escaped to the nearest town, and I can't pronounce it, Duekwe, something like that, assuming that it would be the safest place to be. They stayed with family in that place, in the Carrefour neighborhood, but they had to flee again when hundreds of people were killed in massacres in that neighborhood in late March of 2011. Along with more than 20,000 others, they crammed themselves into the dramatically overcrowded grounds of a local Catholic mission, more or less the size of a sprawling schoolyard. They were still there when Alex visited that mission a few months later, in June. Although Alex didn't meet them at that time. In November, they decided they would try to go home and headed back to their village. That lasted only a few months, as their village came under attack again in February of 2012, and their own compound and everything in it was looted and then destroyed by fire. This time, they headed to the newly established camp for displaced people near that former place. The Nahibi camp was home to around 4,500 people, bigger than most villages in the area, and they were there on July 20th when a mob set upon the camp, killing and beating many residents and once again setting everything on fire. So it was back to the village, but back to the village in fear, too fearful to try to regain fields and plantations that were now occupied by others, too fearful to go much further than about 1 kilometer into the brush outside the village. Forced to flee 4 times in about 18 months, and after recounting his family's story, all he had left to ponder was, when will it ever end? He asked the question with a sense of resignation and exhaustion that it would never end, that violence would lead to more violence and displacement would be followed by more displacement. So the road ahead, working with Clementine and the countless other Ivoirians determined to make and bring this human rights crisis to an end, is to reach a point where that resigned question of when will it ever end has an answer. It will end now. Key to putting an end to impunity and ensuring that the individuals who order, plan, or carry out terrible attacks, like the one against the Nahibi camp, face justice. And it can't be one-sided justice. Many of the officials who may be responsible for terrible human rights violations during the years that Laurent Gbagbo was president have been arrested, though serious concerns mount about the failure to ensure they face fair and prompt trials. Gbagbo himself, of course, is facing a trial before the International Criminal Court in The Hague, but there's been no effort to ensure that the individuals who are associated with the current president, Alassane Ouattara, are held accountable for abuses before assuming power and violations since. There's been no justice for last year's Carrefour massacres, no justice for this year's killings at Nahibi, and at this point in time, no sign of justice to come. But it must come, because that is when it will end, when justice begins. So that's Alex's report from Côte d'Ivoire.
So he's been busy in the last few weeks visiting two countries in the world where there are very, very significant human rights concerns, as we noted. And, you know, his work on our behalf as a senior staff person with the Canadian section often involves travels internationally.
I don't know where he gets the energy, to tell you the truth. He looks tired when he comes here to visit us. You can tell he's been on the road.
Yeah, that's right. I guess one of the things that people often ask me is, you know, where does Amnesty International actually get all the information it has in its reports? And obviously one of the significant ways is through the research missions that people undertake, like Alex and others, on our behalf. But also, it's worth noting that Amnesty, I guess, is very, very cautious in terms of when it does release a report, gets information from a wide range of sources. And in that respect, sometimes it's actually not possible or permissible for Amnesty International researchers to actually go into a country. It's very closed in terms of the government allowing anybody to get there. And an example of that I just wanted to note is that in China, it is very difficult for Amnesty to undertake any research missions. However, because of so many sources of information, it is possible for about what's going on in that country for Amnesty to issue reports. And I just want to mention this in for a moment, and that is yesterday, October 11th, Amnesty International released a major report on the rise of forced evictions in China. It's readily accessible on the amnesty.org site, and it's something I would encourage people who have an interest about what's going on in China to take a look at, because there has been a significant rise in forced evictions there. Typically, this is being fueled by pressure for economic growth, where local officials seem to be rewarded essentially through political incentives through the Communist Party, tax gains and also career advancements that encourage local officials to undertake very illegal acts in terms of forced evictions and removal of people from where they've been living for years and years. And typically this happens in rural areas that are bordering larger cities, but it's actually happening in many, many parts of China. And we would want to note that report is a major report that Amnesty's just released. We don't have too much time now, Jim, so maybe what we should do is just remind everybody about the conference we've got coming up here in Regina on Saturday. And do you want to share a bit of the background of that and the information we've got?
Right. I've got some stuff here.
So there it is. The program is all over at Luther College at the University of Regina. It's a free event, some really interesting speakers and workshops. And we've talked previously on the program about it, but did want to remind people because it's just tomorrow. So, Jim, if you want to run through some of that detail, that'd be great.
Sure. Brian and I were talking about this last week, but we didn't have the nuts and bolts, and now we've got the nuts and bolts. Right. Well, starting off at 8 a.m., and this is entirely discretionary. If you don't want to do this, this is fine, but we're starting off with yoga. So if you're a yoga enthusiast or if you know nothing about yoga and would like to see what it's all about, everyone is welcome, and it's free. And that's going to start at 8 a.m., and that's it. This is all at Luther College on the university. Followed by breakfast. Now, breakfast is available for purchase. So, you don't have to have breakfast at Luther if you have made other arrangements, but it would be fun to meet with all your other participants and have breakfast there. And that's... like I say, that's available for purchase at the cafeteria at Luther. Now, at 10 o'clock, we're going to be in the auditorium for the welcome. And who can we expect to hear from there, Gord?
Well, the welcome is really the kickoff for the conference itself. We're actually going to be having a couple folks who are previous guests on the program. Just about a month ago, we had Katrina Smith and Shannon McNabb on the program. From the First Nations University, we had them talking about the work they were doing to support the Columbia Indigenous peoples with the photo exhibit. They're going to be presenting Sarah Beamish with the petitions that have been signed at the First Nations University. Sarah is the president of the Canadian section, so that's how we'll kind of kick off the day at 10 o'clock.
Oh, okay. And I see it at 10:15. There's going to be a panel discussion moderated by Nicole Huck from CBC. And Sarah Beamish, as you mentioned, will be there. Also, Hillary Holmes, Brenda Anderson, our own Brenda Anderson at Luther. And help me out here, Gord. Louise
Sambadi from Winnipeg, who's a great community activist. She's going to be on the panel and also doing a workshop later in the day.
Awesome. Okay. Now, following that discussion at 11 o'clock, they're going to go into workshops, and as happens so often in different conferences, they're going to be concurrent. So we have three choices. So I'm just looking here.
At the time.
You're checking your watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, so time is getting a little short here. So we've got history, an introduction to Amnesty International. We have social media for human rights, and nourishing your activist spirit, all of which I think would be great. And followed by lunch at 12:30, which is available for purchase at Luther College. At 1:30, we've got four possible workshops: Refugee Rights in Canada, Stopping Racist and Sexist Attacks Against Indigenous People, a dialogue and sharing of ideas to bring about real change, and Middle East and Northern Africa region. And then we have creative activism. So four choices there. We're going to have a keynote speaker. Sarah Beamish is going to be talking to us at 4. And they'll close up at 5. And then we're going to have an evening of musical activism at the Artful Dodger. So we'll have music by Laurie Lintott from Winnipeg. We'll have a drum circle by Lambda Drum Solutions. And if you have a drum, bring it along. We'll have fun. And we hope you can come and join us and try it out. We'll have food and drinks will be available. And that's about all the time we have, Gord.
Right. And just to mention one more time,
okay,
the Radiothon number is 525-7274 if you want to call in right away and make a pledge for the Radiothon.
And also, tonight at the Exchange, it's the Radiothon 2012 kickoff concert. That's at the Exchange. Doors open at 8, show at 9, the people of New Alma, and with special guest the Ben Winoski Project. And we're closing this week's Human Rights Radio and CJTR. We hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."